from Anshe Sfar Beth El Emeth Congregation, it's time to take 10 Minutes for Torah with Rabbi Joel Finkelstein.
Welcome to our discussion of Purim, why Mordechai didn't bow down to Haman. Continued. I'd like to examine in this particular session, particularly the writings of Rabbi Shmuel de Uzeda. Shmuel de Uzeda lived in Sfat with many great writers and mystics and rabbis, scholars, in the early 16th century. And he has an anthology of many different things. He has an anthology on the commentaries on Pirkei Avot, a very popular book, Midrash Shmuel. And here, a new commentary on Esther. And I'd like to show how there's so much literature just on this one question, one point. And let's just give it as an example of how much depth there is to the Megillah and how rabbis tended to view the Megillah as like gufo shel Torah. It's part of the Torah. We have to interpret every single verse very, very deeply. The question here is very troubling. After all, the Talmud says that some people were quite upset with Mordechai. They didn't understand. Why wouldn't he bow down? So he said, well, how can he bow down to an idol? He says, not bowing down to an idol. He's bowing to a person. People used to bow to people all the time. Avraham did it. Moshe did it. It doesn't seem to be a problem. So why couldn't he bow down? So, of course, the rabbis in the Talmud say that maybe there was an idol around his neck, in which case it was justified. But there's this other idea that he started up with Haman unnecessarily. However, Shmuel de Uzeda and all those he quotes are trying to justify what exactly is going on here and why did he do it. So firstly, they point out that it's kind of odd that the king would command that one of his servants should be bowed down to. I mean, really the king is the one who should be bowed down to. So it could be that that's how, says Rabbi Shmuel de Uzeda, that's how they came to this conclusion that maybe it was an idol, because who would want, what king would command that they should bow to his second in command rather than the king himself? Must be that there was an idol there. Could be. And that's why they emphasize, Ki chen tzivu lo melech. They should bow down to him because that's what the king commanded, not because they want to bow to Haman, but because that's what Ahasuerus demanded. He says he really put the idolatry there for two reasons. One reason was to show that, well, you don't have to bow to me. I mean, if it's the king we have to pay homage to, but you're just bowing down to my idol. I put this idol on my shirt here, so, or maybe it was on a t-shirt or something. And that's why you're bowing down, not because of me, God forbid, after all. And he was sort of a phony, modest person. He really wasn't modest at all. And that's one reason. He says another idea was that he's thinking, what excuse could I give Mordechai to go against the king and then get rid of him and kill him? So it was a way of getting Mordechai killed. And he reads the verse in a very interesting way. He says, everyone was bowing to the king, to Haman, because that's what the king commanded, and Mordechai would not bow. He knew that Mordechai wouldn't bow. Not that Mordechai did not bow. He knew that Mordechai would not bow. That's what it means. And he was looking for an excuse to get rid of Mordechai. There is another possibility raised, very interesting, that he says, Mordechai lo yichrav lo shtachvet, not that he didn't right away. It says that he commanded that everyone should bow, and Mordechai right away, at the beginning, he decided in his heart, as it says in the book of Daniel, who is similar to Mordechai in his predicament, he said that he put it in his heart not to eat any of the forbidden foods. So Mordechai, from day one that this law came out to bow to Haman, he put it in his heart, I'm going to sanctify God's name. I'm not going to bow down to this person. The Midrash says, of course he can't do it. Mordechai is from Benjamin. Benjamin is the tribe that has the presence of God dwelling on its shoulders. Ben Tefav Shachen, there's the tribal land in which the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, rests in his place. How can I bow down? I'm not the kind of person who can bow to anyone else, because I come from Benjamin. But the question is, why didn't he do it quietly? Why don't you avoid the place? You know, what do you have to be there for altogether? Go somewhere else. But apparently he was put there by Esther. He was meant to be there. And he was ready to publicly give his life for God That was what he was willing to do. Now then he suggests two possibilities as to the people who urged him to bow. It says that they all say to him, they say, why are you going against the mitzvah of the king? So they told him day after day, and he just wouldn't listen to them. Who are these people? What do they have in mind? So one idea is they're Gentiles, and they don't like Haman either. Who would? He's such a braggart. He didn't really have any real friends. They came there to listen to him, and they buttered him up. But as soon as he fell, they were happy to step on him right away, as we see from Chavronan and even his wife and his friends. So they were happy. So they were saying to him, you know, we don't like him either. We can't stand him either. But you know, you should bow down because of Haman, but because of the king. If the king says bow down, you really should do that, don't you think? He then suggests that actually Esther had placed Mordechai there. She said, look, Nebuchadnezzar, my father, he used to have a Jew, a tzaddik, a righteous Jew, who stood at the court of the king. What about you? What kind of righteous Jew do you have? So he said, all right, we'll appoint Mordechai. And even not only Mordechai, but like a whole Sanhedrin, a whole court gathered there. And those are the people, maybe those are the people who were urging him to bow down. He said, I understand, we're bowing down. You're allowed to bow to a person. What are you talking about? They didn't think they had an idol on him. So these are the Chachamim. They were the ones who urged him every day to do it this way. Another possible excuse as to why he wasn't bowing down was because it says the Avdei HaMelech, the servants of the king, bowed down, but it doesn't say the Sarim, that the officers did. Now, Shmuel Duzeda's teacher said, no, maybe the other way around. Maybe even the officers bowed down. He's not sure which way to go on that. Then there were these people who told on Mordechai. They kind of egged Haman on. They said, you know, they told Haman, and what's going to happen? Are you going to let Mordechai just get away with not bowing to you? After all, he told us he was a Jew. So he says, this is typical. Once they found out he was a Jew, even if they were more friendly before, they were trying to urge him, you know, don't put your life in jeopardy. Now they say, oh, you're a Jew. Oh, that's different. Then they were trying to get him. They specifically went to Haman to try to egg him on to get rid of this fellow who wasn't bowing down. Because after all, and here he speaks from experience, having recently experienced the expulsion from Spain, he says, you know, this is the way it is in life. And very often there's a hatred, not against one Jew for one thing he did, but against all Jews. And you felt it here from all these so-called friends of his. Another possibility is that they said, look, you, of course you should bow down. You're from Jacob. Jacob bowed down to Esav. So you should bow down as well. But he said, no, I have to make a tikkun. The Jews in the days of Nebuchadnezzar did bow to the idol, and I'm not going to do that. And he's trying to make a tikkun, a fixing of the original sin that had taken place earlier. It could be that he refused to bow because there was this tradition that Haman was from Amalek and he wanted nothing to do with Amalek, and therefore it angered Haman because he realized that he's not bowing because he is from Amalek, and the whole hatred between Amalek and the Jews came to the fore. Another possibility as to why he didn't bow down, he said, people were wondering, it's an interesting Supreme Court case. Hayam Dudi Rei Mordechai. Or will Mordechai stand, or will Haman be victorious? Why? Because they wondered, you know, this is an interesting case. Because after all, he has religious rights. You know, under Persia, they were very tolerant. And the rabbis say that they gave them kosher food at the banquet, whatever you wanted. People, he was very solicitous of the general public. So if he said, look, I can't bow down. I know you're supposed to bow down, but I can't because I'm Jewish. I'm a Jew. So they were wondering, would that work? Would that be enough of an excuse not to bow down or not? It's interesting that many modern commentators have pointed out parallels between Joseph and Mordechai. They're both from the Rachel family, Benjamin from Joseph, from Rachel. And there's an interesting parallel that Rabbi Shmuel Duzeda points out. Every day they spoke to him, they said, why are you going against the king? Why are you going against him? He wouldn't give in. He just would not give in. It's the same as Yosef. The story of Yosef, she spoke to him day after day, please be with me, and he refused to be with the wife of Potiphar, not in this world and not in the next, as the rabbis say, and he just wouldn't give in, even though there was a daily bombardment of seduction, he wouldn't give in. So too with Mordechai, he was firm, even after days and days of being urged, he would not give in. He quotes Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, another exile from Spain, a family who said that maybe he felt that you have to bow to the king, to Haman, if you're not so important, but since Mordechai somehow is connected to the queen, therefore it would be a diminution of the king to someone connected to the queen to bow to someone lesser than the king himself. But of course, this excuse didn't hold up either. Finally, we have an interesting theory by another commentator whom he quotes, who has his own commentary we can read today, and that's Rebbe Ezra Ashkenazi, who wrote a number of books, including the Ma'aseh Hashem on the Chumash, and he quotes him and he says as follows. He says, you know, in my day, he says, also in around 1500, we're aware that in the Arab lands and the Ishmael and the Arabia, they don't make the Jews into slaves. They have slaves, but they don't make Jews into slaves. Why? They say, well, the Jews already served as slaves in Egypt, so they don't serve anymore. So Mordechai felt like, if you're a servant of the king, you're a slave to the king, you have to bow down. I'm not a servant. We Jews, we have a special status. We were given privileged status as those who were from the Jewish tribe, and we don't have to bow down. And that was the question. It was a question of Jewish rights. Mordechai was one who stood up for Jewish rights, whether it's from a religious rights point of view, mentioned before, or from a national point of view that we had a dispensation. And he wasn't going to let this dispensation for Jews slip. He wanted to hold up that dispensation. In the end, of course, Haman temporarily has a victory and tries to get rid of all the Jews. But in the end, of course, this resoluteness of Mordechai was not punished, but was rewarded. And in the end, it was through his resoluteness that indeed the Haman was killed and Mordechai rose to great prominence. It's a story that we pay great attention to. The Megillah is, it's like a gufo shel Torah. The Gemara says we darshan, we interpret it like it's part of the Torah. And here you see where Shmuel de Uzeda, after the expulsion from Spain, many Jews lived as conversos, as private, secret Jews. He's writing about, and so many of his friends, Shlomo Alkabetz, who wrote the Lachadodi, many people in Sfat from Sephardic backgrounds, conversal backgrounds, they're there trying to understand this book. And here we see a story of a man stood up against the Persian Empire, against the most powerful man in the empire, Haman himself. And he said, no, he will not bow down. He remembers his tribe of Benjamin. He remembers the mistakes of the past. And he's resolute. And God, in this case, rewarded him for being resolute. So too in our day, we have to remain strong in the face of daily seductions to go in other directions, and remain resolute, like Mordechai, and hopefully that, as we say on Saturday night, we hope that just as they had great joy for their being resolute in their days, so in our days, may be rewarded for standing firm the principles of the Torah. Thank you for joining us here at the Andrei Sfar Beth Lamath Congregation here in Memphis, Tennessee. Join us each week for the discussion of the Parsha and the various holidays. Wish everyone a happy Purim. And we thank Jason Lefkowitz, our producer. Thank you.
This has been 10 Minutes for Torah with Rabbi Joel Finkelstein. To learn more, visit asby.org.